Our reading this morning is from Frederick Buechner. We lie in our beds in the dark. There's a picture of the children on the bureau. A patch of moonlight catches our clothes thrown over the back of a chair. We can hear the faint rumble of the furnace in the cellar. We're surrounded by the reassurance of the familiar. When the weather is bad, we have shelter. When things are bad in our lives, we have a place where we can retreat to lick our wounds. While tens of thousands of people, many of them children, wander the dark streets in search of some corner to lie down in, out of the wind. Yet we are homeless in the sense of having homes, but not really being at home in them. To be really at home is to be really at peace. And there can be no real peace for any of us until there is some measure of real peace for all of us. When we close our eyes to the deep needs of other people, whether they live on the streets or under our own roof, and when we close our eyes to our own deep need to reach out to them, we can never be fully at home anywhere.
So when money is tight and you are 11 years old and it takes you more than a month and a half of extra dog walking and allowance hoarding and chores that your friends would never let you live down if they knew that you were doing them, like pulling on yellow gloves up to the elbow and cleaning your sister's bathroom, all in order to save money for the one thing that will make your young life complete and your world perfectly perfect once it is in your hands, you can become a little obsessed. 3 months earlier, the object of my birthday desire, which my parents made sure that I received, had been the racing blue chromoly, thunderbolt striped, yellow wheeled, silver polished handlebar envy of my friends. BMX bicycle. In those days, we called such things rad. A description that I hope makes a comeback now that you've heard the word in the pulpit, as in, I love this church. It is so rad. But like with any new object that we get, the fun does not really begin until we can accessorize, right? And this is true of everything from bicycles to Vera Wang dresses to houses to minister attire, a new stole, to the new puppy my family and I brought home 3 weeks ago, who is the proud wearer of a Union Jack dog tag in honor of his English heritage, but who will never, ever, ever wear one of those sweaters. If I have any say, which I don't. A bike was beautiful. But I knew it could be even more beautiful if I could just have enough money to purchase the accessory kit that hung on the wall behind the counter of Jim's Bicycles, third hook down, eye level, that included inside this bag a blue and yellow pinstriped number plate and blue grips for the handlebars and matching blue gloves. And perhaps coolest of all, caps for the air valves on the wheels that were designed to look like blue dice with yellow dots. Can you see it? It's rad looking, right? All it took was $18. Which in 1984 was no small amount of money, and still isn't for not just a few of us. And before I go on, I am thinking of the graph in the shape of a pyramid that you might remember learning about in school designed by Abraham Maslow in 1943 that had our human needs ranked from bottom to top. Do you remember that? At the bottom are things like food and safety and shelter and security of self and family. And at the top are things like morality and forgiveness and lack of prejudice and spontaneity. Maslow's theory being that you need things on the bottom first in order to get things on the top. Could I have had the capacity to be creative and self-actualized with my blue speed racing bicycle if I didn't feel nurtured at home? Could my mom have afforded to hand me those yellow gloves and pointed me into my sister's bathroom? Could she have afforded to pay me to do that if she and dad were worried about home and safety and money? That I didn't ask these questions at 11 tells you just how safe and secure I felt. And I'm still not sure whether that was a good thing, to feel so oblivious. "What's up, Jim?" I say as I saunter into the bike shop, John Wayne-like. Not stopping to pour my eyes over the new machines on the floor, but instead I go right to the counter and I reach into my pocket and I pull out 2 5s, 8 1s, and for tax, 2 quarters, 1 dime, and 3 pennies. Pointing to the third hook down behind Jim's shoulder, I say, "The blue one." "Rad," he says. "I know," I reply, as I give him over what is, up to that point, is my life savings. And he gives me my blue racing bag of accessories, my life now perfectly complete, my world perfectly perfect, as self-actualized as any 11-year-old can be, as happy as any child deserves to be. So in the basement of my childhood home, it is still there to this day, there's a wooden box that I made, a platform for my bicycle, made so I could work on it. Can you guess the 3-letter word that I painted on the side? Rad. It's still there. That afternoon, down in the basement, I twisted on the grips and I zip tied on the number plate and I screwed on to the valves, the blue dice, and I pulled on the blue gloves and I stood back. I just admired it. While upstairs, the voices of my parents sang softly to their favorite Christopher Cross song. "Sailing takes me where to where I'm going." Do you remember that song? Reminding me, almost like an inverted Maslow pyramid, I was safe. That I could be self-actualized down in the basement while my parents were upstairs. Now, years later, I know from experience and time, and maybe most of all, being with you, how complicated the word home is, how behind the lovely painted doors of our lovely communities, there are stories of people living on all levels of that pyramid. There are compassionate people. There are forgiven and forgiving people. There are as happy on the inside as I look on the outside kind of people. And too, there are I can't pay the mortgage people. There are shh, whisper so the kids don't hear people. And there are people who are broken, but we hope not beyond repair. And there are people who live in dreamy, magazine-style homes, but who for any number of good reasons are about as homeless in their hearts as you can possibly imagine. All of which is why the line you've heard me say often about the church being a place where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable is so complicated, because very often we're talking about the very same person. It's true, isn't it, that real people have a way of not fitting into the labels that we want to give them. And that is both a great inconvenience and a great blessing. So the next afternoon after church, after my altar boy duties, I trade in my blue navy pants and my black and white altar boy cassock for my blue Puma tennis shoes and my new blue racing gloves. And I take the racing blue bike for its first newly accessorized ride. And do you know how when you have a new haircut you especially love, or a new outfit, or you've just washed and armor-alled your car, or you've bought some new sunglasses that make you look rad? Do you know how you just feel fantastic? Almost like you're invincible, like nothing and no one in the world can touch you. That's how it was for me that afternoon, all blue and full of preteen speed as I wheelied and jumped and raced through the neighborhood. Now, as kids and adults, we all need boundaries, don't we? Limits keep us safe, and lines that we learn not to cross. And what do 11-year-olds and sometimes 40-year-olds in midlife crisis love to do? Test the boundaries, I think I heard. Test the limits. Nathan, said my mother before I left, remember you are not to ride as far as Delmar Boulevard. Too many strangers, too many cars. Sure, I say. But that is before my accessorized blue speed invincibility washes over me. And I'm feeling so fantastic and untouchable that before I know it, I am as far as Delmar Boulevard, Big City Boulevard, Harley Davidson Dive Bar Boulevard. On my right shoulder, I can hear the angel's voice. Remember Animal House? Nathan, you are not to go as far as Delmar. But on the left shoulder, there is this other voice. What can happen? Scoot down the sidewalk, take a right. Back in the neighborhood, you'll be able to hit Dead Man's Hill, famous jump. You'll be fine. Pedal, 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 pedal. Swoop past the Harley Davidson dive bar. Swoop past the tattooed men with cigarettes dangling from their lips. Swoop past the pack of teenage girls with black makeup around their eyes that looked like pandas. Jolt left, the neighborhood gate is not 20 yards away. What does mom know anyway, says the left shoulder. When all of a sudden, three boys on bikes roll slowly in front of the gate, blocking my path. Screech the brake and stop not 3 feet away from them. Rad bike, one of them says. He's got a cigarette smoldering between his thumb and his index finger. The other two smile in agreement. And now the blood rises to my face, and my arms and my hands are tingling, and I know not what to do. Now, boundaries are one thing, and limits are one thing, but one unrestrained freedom that I know all of us want for ourselves, we want especially for our babies, is freedom from fear, right? It's right there at the bottom of Maslow's pyramid. Safety, security, the absence of threat, shelter, home. Home, safe. The fear I felt in my body is now, I think it's 30 years old, and I can still taste it on the back of my tongue. And I'm wondering, what do kids do who confront so much worse than this all the time? And because we're coming out of the summer and I've had no sermons to give, I'm wondering, seriously, what does fear taste like if you're an 11-year-old kid in Damascus this morning? And I'm wondering, going back now 18 months, what do you think Trayvon felt? What do you think he tasted in his mouth on his way home that night to his uncle's house? And he first saw the flash of metal in George's hand. You might think I'm making connections like these just so that, you know, you think that I'm so relevant, that our church is so current, but actually, this is what our religion asks us to do. We are asked every Sunday, and hopefully, my friends, Monday through Saturday, to step out of our lives enough so that we can step into someone else's life. We're asked to grow a soul large enough and deep enough to let someone else's soul inside us, a Syrian soul, a black kid with a hoodie, his soul, George Zimmerman's soul. It's a tough one. Maybe this is why Buechner says in our reading the chain read so beautifully, to be at home is to be really at peace, and we cannot have any real peace until there is some measure of peace for all of us. Such a tough, tough challenge. So back to Del Mar. I said, "Rad bike," a cigarette-smoking one said to me. "Thanks," I say. And as the other two roll closer to me, he says, "I will let you keep it, if. I will let you keep it, if." So scared. "You give me those." And he points to the blue dice on the wheel. "And those." He points to my blue gloves. "And that," he points to the number plate. "How tight are the grips?" he says. And he leans over with his hand, the cigarette ash snowing down to his feet as he turns one. "Good. I'll take those two." The transfer of goods took about 2.5 minutes, but it felt to me like a lifetime. But he kept his promise. He let me keep the bike, which once clear of the three boys, I rode as hard and as fast as I've ever ridden in my life. Hands gripped around the cold, bare chrome metal. All the way home. "When things are bad in our lives," says Buechner, "we have a place where we can retreat to." At least that's the hope. At least that's what each one of us deserves, truly. Which that day I was lucky enough to find. My mom in the kitchen, the bike thrown to the ground outside, me running through the front door to her, she turning around, me tall enough to bury my face into the corner of her turtleneck sweater. Home safe. safe at home. So here you and I are at the beginning of our church year together, and I have had the privilege of knowing many of you for years, others of you only for a short time, and others of you, it's your first Sunday, perhaps, or second, through these doors. And as your minister, I extend to you these promises that within these walls and within our Unitarian Universalist religion, from whatever homelessness you come, you are home safe. We promise that whatever fear has stopped you in your tracks, has rolled across your life, and said to you in sinister ways that you do not belong, that you can't love who you love and think what you think and question what you need to question, we promise you, you are home safe. And we promise that in the midst of your time here, you will be troubled enough by the stories of other people's lives that you will be asked to grow a soul. And you will notice the homelessness of others, and that your feeling of being at peace now depends, my friends, on the peace of the person sitting next to you. Because here in this home of the Spirit, which is what it is, you and I gather, we may not share the same fears. We may not agree about God. We may not have the same tax bracket. We may not align with the same political party. We may not live in the same zip code. We may not say the same kinds of prayers, but we can be together and offer each other a sanctuary to retreat to when life is hard, and a sanctuary to celebrate in when life is joy. And so I say to you this year, welcome home. You are home safe. You are home safe. You are home safe. My friends, say with me.